Oh, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Natasha Moore.
Australia's going to be hosting the G20 later this year in Brisbane. And the stated priorities of the conference are to do with economic growth and employment in the world's largest economies. But what about the more vulnerable developing countries? What kind of a look-in will they get? Someone who's been working in this area for some time and knows what he's talking about is John Beckett. John's with us. He's the National Coordinator of Mica Challenge in Australia. He's in the studio. Good to have you in, John.
Good to be here. Thanks, Simon.
Now, tell us, first of all, for those who don't know, what is Mica Challenge? Who are you guys? What are you on about?
Yeah, so Mica Challenge is we're a coalition, essentially, of a whole bunch of Christian development agencies and churches and individuals who come together under the umbrella of Mica Challenge. Because we have a common concern to make sure that Australia is doing all we can to address issues of global poverty. We're set up around the framework of the Millennium Development Goals, and so heading towards 2015. And as you mentioned, we're talking about the G20 this year, a great opportunity here in Australia for us to really, push progress towards those 2015 goals, but also see what we think might be the next major breakthrough in the fight against global poverty.
So could you tell us, John, a bit more about the Millennium Development Goals? What are those? Where did they come from? And where are we up to with them?
Yeah, as I said, a 2015 target date. So they were started in the year 2000 at the turn of the millennium. Eight goals, essentially, if you took an overarching look at them, the goal is to halve poverty by 2015. And so there's a number of indicators that come out under these goals. So we're looking at economic issues. We're looking at issues of child mortality, child deaths, maternal mortality, so death of mothers during childbirth, education, water, sanitation, the key indicators that people would naturally look at when they were trying to measure what's happening around poverty. And so for the first time, it's given us a set of measurable targets that we can actually track progress against.
Now, John, we interviewed a few years ago now, it was 2008, Joel Edwards from the UK, who's working in this area. He reckoned we were about 100 years behind schedule on some of the goals, so that didn't sound particularly encouraging. But where are we doing the best and the worst? And you know, how's it going? What's the score?
Yeah, at a global level, it's been phenomenal, really, the progress, when you look at it. Overall, if you look at some of the things like the education targets, we now have more than 90% of kids getting a full primary education across the world. There's a quality between boys and girls in that education as well, so that's something that's really exciting. We've got a target around water that's been met, where we've increased by half the number of people who have access to a clean drinking water source. If you look at the child mortality goal, you've seen the number of children dying before their fifth birthday come down from 12 million to about 6 million now. And so this is phenomenal progress. But then when you take a closer look at particular regions in the world, and particularly the Pacific, where our closest neighbours, there's been not great progress in the Pacific and parts of South Asia and also in Africa. And so the global picture's great, but when you look at the specifics, there's a lot more that we can do.
So quite a few pluses and minuses going on there. I wonder how consistent or patchy that progress has been. So with the global financial crisis happening in kind of around the world and particularly in developed economies, has that derailed this project at all? What kind of an impact has that had?
Yeah, on some of the indicators, we saw a slowing in progress. But in others, we've seen that consistent progress continue. And so economically, you've seen some parts of the world that have been hit hard by that. And certainly one of the issues that we campaign around is aid and the giving of rich nations to poorer nations. And certainly in Australia, that's one of the key focuses for us. And we've seen those contributions to aid drop off as a result of the global financial crisis as governments start to look inward and look at revenue problems within their nations. And so that's one of the main reasons why we brought this the focus onto this taxation issue, to go side by side with the issue of aid. So as a friend of ours, Derije Alamiyahu, who is an African guy, was just in town a few weeks ago, and he used a great example. He said, look, at the moment we get $1 in from put from rich countries into Africa. But the World Bank has said that for every dollar that flows in, $3 flows out. And so if you do the basic maths, 1 minus 3 is -2. How can we develop our nations and our economies if we're going backwards? But if we can keep the $1 that you're giving us, which is effective and is doing a lot of good, but also address the issue of the $3 that are flowing out back to the developing world, then it's basic maths, 1 plus 3 equals 4, and we can start to develop our own economies.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. We're talking to John Beckett from Micah Challenge, and we're looking at issues addressing extreme poverty around the world. John's heavily involved in this. Now, you've alluded to this, but I want to get you to talk about this campaign that's underway through Micah Challenge called Shine the Light. Tell us about that campaign. What's it about? What are you aiming for there?
At its core, it's about promoting transparency in the global financial system for the benefit of the world's poorest people. If you look at very conservative estimates, suggest that at least $160 billion is flowing out of developing nations each year as a result of multinational tax dodging and corruption. And so it's a significant amount of money. It's more money than they receive in aid each year. And it's money that rightfully belongs to the citizens of those nations. And so these multinational companies are coming in, using the infrastructure, the services that are provided by those governments and those taxpayers, making profits, but then shifting those profits offshore into tax havens where they don't have to pay tax on it. And so we're seeking to introduce a few measures that will help developing nations and also Australia and developed economies as well, I guess, stem the tide of this flow.
So a lot of this activity is illegal and some of it's only unethical. Is that right? How do you go about getting these multinational corporations to do the right thing in this area?
Two terms that are used, tax evasion and tax avoidance. And evasion refers to the illegal activity, and avoidance refers to the behaviour that some would say is ethical, but there's some grey areas there. And then certainly we would say some of it is clearly unethical, where they're just exploiting a system that was set up, a global tax system that wasn't set up to deal with a globalised economy. And now they're exploiting the rules for their advantage. And so it's been recognised by governments across the world, and certainly the G20, that this is an issue that needs to be addressed, and that tax needs to happen at the place where the economic activity happens. At the moment, that's not happening. And so to do that, we think the key is to try and promote transparency. And so the three things that we're asking both the Australian government but also the G20 to look at are essentially about increasing transparency in the system. They're about making sure that countries share taxation information. When residents of one country invest in another country, that country knows that they're doing that and they can track what's happening for their residents. It's about making sure that the people who benefit from setting up trusts and foundations in countries are actually known to the authorities in those countries, that people aren't putting fake names on accounts. And it's also about making sure that multinationals are showing where their economic activity happens around the world.
Hence the name of the campaign, Shine the Light.
Exactly. Yeah.
What does all this have to do with the G20? What's the plan there?
Well, the G20 is an economic forum. It's where the world's 20 largest economies come to speak about issues that affect the global economic system. And so these issues are clearly global issues. You can't address them unilaterally, like Australia acting on this alone wouldn't address the global problem. And so it's the forum where these things get discussed, and Australia has a particular opportunity this year as the chair and therefore the president of the G20 to set the agenda and to work out what gets discussed. And so we've been putting a lot of pressure on the Australian government to make sure that this is prioritised. And as you said earlier, Simon, there's this overarching goal that they want to see 2% increase in global economic growth. But look, if that happens and the benefits of that aren't shared to developing nations who don't have a seat at this table, then you're just increasing inequality in the global system.
What sort of response are you getting? Are you confident that this will be taken seriously by the nations represented? And then I guess further down the track, do these big companies, do they come to the party, do you reckon? Or is it going to be pretty hard work?
It's a mixed bag, I think. We've certainly got the Australian government, the Treasurer Joe Hockey, and the Prime Minister have both mentioned that this will be on the agenda and will be a priority. But then there seems to be a lag between what they're saying and the action that they're taking domestically to address these issues. We know that multinational companies are lobbying against this. Some think that it's a great idea. Some of the big mining companies, for instance, are already doing some of these things. And so the argument that they have and we have is also about levelling the playing field for business. We're not anti-business in any way. This is good for business. If investors know what's happening in particular companies, then it instills confidence in the investor community. It's also good for small business because at the moment they can't move their profits offshore in the way that big multinationals can. And so levelling the playing field is good for Australian business and particularly good for the poor as well. So we're certainly hoping that they will come to the party and that there'll be some concrete action at the G20 as well.
So to get a bit more personal, John, what's led you to be involved in this work? What's your story?
Look, I guess at an early age, as I said, Micah Challenge is a coalition of Christians. So we're a faith-based coalition. And what drives us is the fact that we follow Jesus. And one of the things that as we look at our Christian faith is that we're basically called to embody our faith in the world. And so for a Christian, where there is injustice, we're called to live in a way that meets that injustice with justice. Where there is brokenness, we're called to bring wholeness. Where there is darkness, we're called to shine light and to shed light. And so where we look at the world and we see this fundamental brokenness and darkness that means that some people are marginalised and oppressed, then I think, you know, in terms of my life and certainly for all of those that are involved in Micah Challenge, it means that we seek to live in a way that deals with that corruption, with that brokenness. And so it's not just about in the head, in the clouds, it's about actual action. And I guess that's predominantly what drives me. And I have a passion to see people who are suffering in this world through no fault of their own, restored to a place of wholeness so that they can flourish in life in the same way that we get opportunity to do that here in a place like Australia.
In this work, and you have been for a while now, is it hard not to get a bit ground down or even cynical about it? Or has some of the gains that you've seen, is that enough to kind of keep you going each morning and getting up out of bed and excited?
It certainly takes courage and perseverance, I think. I'm by nature a bit of an optimist. I have a lot of hope for the world. A lot of that's based in my faith, but I certainly see a lot of good things and a lot of goodness in the world as well. So we've seen some, as I said, it's some amazing progress over the years. But yeah, there are times when you can't influence a decision that, say, government makes or something that's happening on the kind of political level across the world, and you feel like, oh, what are we doing? But at that times, the stuff that I talked about, where we're seeking to really live a particular way. So this is not just about a problem that needs to be solved, and if it's not effective, then we give up. It's about living a particular way. And when you embody that kind of way of life, then you step into the world each day and you see the problems and you try to find solutions. And it's not about plotting, but it's about living as effectively as you can in response to those problems in the world.
What can we be doing in the face of, you know, the vast need that's out there and the complexity of the issues? What are things that just ordinary Australians can get involved with and do?
I think the simplest thing is to become aware. Simple research and getting exposed to some of these issues and seeing that it is a problem, which can be quite detailed, but when you come up out of the detail and you look at the basics of this problem, it's an issue of injustice. So I think education, but then as you get educated, you become passionate about these things and you see there are opportunities, obviously, to give individually. A lot of Australians do that. We're very generous individually. But then we're passionate about addressing some of the causes and the systems and the structures of this injustice as well. And so in that sense, participating in the democratic process where we have a voice and we're invited and encouraged to speak into the seats of power in our nation and in our world, this G20 is a classic example of where we have opportunity to do that this year and to influence an agenda and to potentially make a significant difference for not just individuals or communities, but for potentially tens of millions of people around the world.
It's good to see your passion for this, John, and good luck as we approach the G20 later in the year. Thanks for coming in.
Great to talk to you.
If you're interested in finding out more about these issues, you can visit the Mica Challenge Australia website at micachallenge.org.au. And if you want to get directly involved with the Shine the Light campaign, that website is at shinethelight.com.au. Thanks for listening. See you next week.